You talk golden to me.
Welcome to another episode of the Talk Golden Me video podcast show. Your host, Evan Golden, a.k.a. Golden TV, here in TBT Studios in Boca Raton. Today, I sit down with Mr. Darren Prince, a prominent sports and celebrity agent, a global advocate for addiction and recovery, and he'll be sharing his journey and his best-selling memoir, Aiming High. Darren, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Thank you, legend. Thank you for having me.
I love that you call me legend. That's so cool. Just local, though, as they see on the shirt. Just local. This man is international legend. Darren Prince, I've been following you. I've worked with Prince Marketing Group. He's the CEO of Prince Marketing Group. They represent some of the biggest celebrities, athletes, wrestlers, musicians, reality stars all over the world. He books them. He gets them licensing deals, endorsement deals, from autographs to personal appearances to movie appearances. Darren Prince, I mean, do you just pinch yourself and be like, whoa, this is my life. I get to hang out with the biggest celebrities all over the world. I'm on tour for a book right now.
You know, I've never taken it for granted. I definitely have a blessed life, and I think it's about bringing people with me along for the ride. You got to pay it forward.
Dre, I think you actually started in the sports card industry, which is now hotter than ever, right?
Yep, you got it.
Tell me how that started.
So I started a little-known company when I was 14 called Baseball Card City, a business teacher who I'm still close with to this day. I grew up with a severe learning disability, and he always kind of took extra care of me, and he challenged the classmates to come back with the business the next day. Now, I basically started collecting when I was 10, and a lot of my friends, 12, 13, 14, cards started getting corny. So I held four different jobs, squeezing orange juice at a supermarket, delivering newspapers. I was a busboy, and I worked the stock room at a sneaker store. I would buy everybody's collections for next to nothing. And before you know it, that night I was challenged. I go downstairs to my dad. I said, Dad, I'm starting a business. I need insurance on my cards. He said, what do you need? I said, about 8 or 9. So he goes, okay, I'll call homeowners. I'll get you $1,000 worth of insurance. I said, Dad, 8 or 9,000. He's like, what are you talking about? How do you have 8 or 9,000 worth of cards? So I bring down the price guide. This is 1984.
You used the Beckett, right?
No, there wasn't even Beckett.
Oh, there's no Beckett then?
I have to correct everybody. It was called CCP, Current Card Price Guide. It was newspaper, like the Wall Street Journal.
You're an OG collector, man.
I'm one of the original OGs, as Darren Revelle and Jason Koons and all the guys called me a couple nights ago on what's the new app that everybody's on?
It's the audio one.
Yeah.
I just got invited to it. I don't even know the name of it. I know it's not Parler.
Oh my God, I can't even think about it. It's not Parler.
What's it called?
Clubhouse.
Thank you.
So they had a sports card one, and I logged on, and immediately I logged on, they all started inviting me. Like, we got one of the OGs, and so I started doing a baseball card show in Livingston, New Jersey. I spent every night, bro, for 2 weeks preparing the most beautiful table, the most perfect setup. I felt this was my time to arrive, and I made over $1,000 on that Sunday, and the light bulb went on in my dad's head, in my head, and every weekend, it wasn't about girls, I can care less about it, was setting up for the next baseball card show. By the time I was 16, I was making about $300,000 to $400,000 a year.
Did you have that? Like, I'm playing Sega Genesis. Kids are playing. Like, how do you have that drive and that entrepreneurial spirit?
A lot of it got instilled in me from my dad. And I said, growing up being classified as having a learning disability, I felt like I always had something to prove to everybody. I wasn't the smartest kid, but when it came to numbers, I was a genius. I was able to study statistics on Daryl Strawberry, Don Mattingly, Roger Clemens, Tony Gwynn, Mark McGuire, all those guys. And I was the guy that everybody came to get stats. So it made me feel good about myself, and I just ran with it. And I was the first kid in probably the entire state to have a cell phone. It was called Bell Atlantic back then, and it was a aluminum battery with a rubber antenna. It was $3 a minute, and in between class, I would take calls from different stockbrokers because I was advertising in Sports Collector's Digest, which was the Bible back then.
Wow. What a story. And I was reading that you actually had your hands on the Honus Wagner.
I got a picture on my phone. I bought and sold 3 of them. The last one I sold was when I got out of the business in 1991. I sold it for $120,000.
Wait, so you sold that for 30 years ago, you sold it for $121,000, the Honus. I thought that's like the most expensive card of all time.
I was coming back from a speaking engagement maybe this summer, and I messaged it to Revelle and Kenny Golden. And both of them were like, holy shit, where's that card now? I'm like, I have no idea, but I know I sold it for $120,000. Kenny goes to me, easy, $3.5 to $4 million today.
Wow.
But look, on a flip, I made $45,000. You know, that's what it was like back then. You don't think about holding cards. You don't, you're in the business, you turn and burn your money. you know, and I look at it as I'd rather flip that money 20, 30 times. And, you know, yeah, I look back now, you know, it's incredible. I got back into it 5 months ago.
How come you think the sports card industry is now exploding since the pandemic kind of took over? I feel like the card industry market has just been on the incline.
Well, I think the pandemic, I think there's a big gambling component to it. I think a lot of poker players got into it. I think Wall Street and all the, you know, big hedge funds now are paying attention to it. The Last Dance documentary blew it up. It's incredible. You know, my boy Jason Koons, when he told me about everything in August, I was like, I'm going back in, but as an investor. So, I mean, I must have dropped, you know, close to a half a million just in the past 4 or 5 months.
And you have to do it right. So kind of the novices out there, you don't just buy a card now. You actually have to send it away to get it rated and graded.
Or buy it graded or in already, from PSA. And you know,
is PSA like the official grading? Because I've seen a bunch.
They're the holy grail.
They're the holy grail.
Yep.
Did you ever have a Michael Jordan rookie?
Literally, I was with my boy Joe Tuttle from Banyan on the way over to Banyan Rehab. I was speaking at one of his properties, and we talked about it. There was times I would have 100 Jordan rookies in my showcase. But no grading company back then. So they were what was known as card savers, the soft little card savers, and, you know, banging them out every weekend, $150, $200, and can't even tell you how many tens I must have had.
Wow. And it's crazy to me when they do rate these cards because what to me looks like a 10, all these cards, like, no, that's misprint there, a little ding there. I mean, a 10 is not easy to find. We're talking an immaculate print. And it could have no curves, but even if it was printed, right, it wasn't printed properly or cut properly.
Yep.
Wild stuff.
You know, I never hold on to anything. Like, what I did when I got out of cards and I sold the company in 19 for $1 million, I went, you know, headfirst into sports and celebrity memorabilia signings. I thought that was cool. It was sexy being around all the stars. And Muhammad Ali was one of the first guys I did a signing with. And, you know, that business blew up for 4 or 5 years. As I talk about in my book, I got in a lot of trouble in 1995 with the FBI. And without knowing, I was selling a bunch of fraudulent Michael Jordan autographs and cost me everything. Here I went from this hotshot kid at 14 that had everything and employed all his friends and the cars and the woman and the life and first person to buy a house to borrowing $300 a week from my friends so I could eat because I was offering refunds to everybody because I felt so horrible.
Is that still going? I mean, now with the 3D printing and the crazy technology, I feel like you're just printing paper cardboard.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of fakes? Like
there's fakes with cardboards and memorabilia. I mean, mine was memorabilia. Mine was with the autographs. You know, same thing. Think about how easy it is to forge a name or something, you know, to perfection.
But now the certificate authenticity
it's got to be PSA handles that too. PSA does a lot of secondhand, you know, they've got forensic document experts.
I mean, there's just so many people that have, I feel like, a collection of cards in a shoebox, in the attic.
I believe
they haven't been graded. Maybe they have in some cases, and people are sitting on a lot of money. To me, it's just more exciting than buying a stock or a bond. Like, yeah. Now, do you buy players that you like, that you believe in? You try to see this guy is going to be the next, you know, Dan Marino, Joe Montana? Or do you, like, what is kind of your methodology?
I probably only put, like I told Ravel yesterday, 10% into modern. It's so risky. Somebody gets hurt. If you put money into Jeff Burrows and he went down with the torn ACL, but I'm a diehard Charger fan. I went very heavy after week one into Justin Eber. So that one really, really paid off.
I think that could be a good one.
You know, I bought a lot of Lucas and one of your guys here, Tyler Hero. I bought a lot of him.
Now, the base cards are worthless pretty much. You need like the inserts, the numbered cards.
What I know, I don't know enough about it. But yeah, you've got to get like the insert ones, the randomly autographed ones. They're special prisms colors. I can't keep up with it. So what I did was I kind of went back into my childhood and earlier where, you know, Bird and Magic, who are clients, Joe Montana, a lot of my guys that I work with, you know, I got a lot of Barry Sanders, Ken Griffey Jr., but then I went, you know, much older into, you know, Jerry West, who's a client, you know, that 61, 62 Fleer card's always tough to find centered. And I just know kind of the supply and demand on that market a lot better. And the gains might not be as massive, but you're not going to get hurt.
I think that's the smart route to go is you're already kind of investing in already an established, already a Hall of Famer, and then kind of playing the luck and wish
game. It's the model I had with my agency too. You know, I never really went after young talent because I was like, you know, these guys could just do one dumb thing and their career is over. So,
and they represent you.
I was blessed to, you know, obviously start with Magic as my first client in 1995. And legends and icons are legends and icons.
I mean, you're signing Matt. Like, how did that partnership come about? You signing Magic Johnson –
I started booking signings with him for a couple of years. My dear friend Harlan Winter introduced me to Lon Rosen and Magic, maybe in 93, and I worked through Lon and Magic, and then they kind of started doing their own thing. And after the whole FBI situation, my dad and I went on a fly fishing trip to Alaska with my last $3,000 to my name. An old school Jewish guy was my mentor in life. My best friend said to me, "What is your next move?" And I go, "Dad, I want to be an agent. I really think I could do it, but I don't have 8 years to go to law school, and I don't think I would understand law." He goes, "Law school? Why do you need law school?" He goes, "I'm going to teach you something. Life is about who you know, not what you know." He goes, "You can go to Berrien Springs, Michigan right now and go to Muhammad Ali's ranch." He goes, "Do you realize nobody has that access? You can go to Magic's house in Beverly Hills. Speak to Magic. Speak to Magic. See if he'll help you. Maybe he'll be a client." And I 3 weeks later, I was in East Lansing with him, and we went up to Detroit to an autograph signing I booked, and it was so strange. It was almost like he heard my dad's conversation. He goes, "Boy, what's your next move now?" And I was just nervous. I'm beat up financially. I didn't have a pot to piss in. I remember I made $5,000 or $7,000 off the booking. The money was spent before I even, because I was in that whole reinvention phase of my life. And I told him, I said, "Irvin, I want to be an agent." And he goes, "Man, you need a big client though to start that agency. Who do you have in mind?" And palms are sweating. I'm like, I got to get it out. I got to say something to him. I can't not go for this opportunity in life. And I'm like, "I'm thinking about you." He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "Come here." He put his arms around me. He goes, "You're a good kid." He goes, "You got a good heart. You made a mistake. I know all about making mistakes. I'm going to give you 2 years. But if you don't use me to knock down every door to bring in all the celebrity clients you can, I'm going to fire you before those 2 years are up, because life isn't how successful I become, Darren. I'm going to make it to a level they've never seen. It's about how successful I make you and everybody else around me." And magical words from a magical guy. I leveraged him to, you know, Joe Frazier, Chevy Chase, Pamela Anderson, Evel Knievel, everybody. You know, he took me to Dennis Rahman's restaurant in 1999, 2000. And I got Dennis full time because Magic went there with me to try to get Dennis back into the NBA.
What an inspiration. I think so many people could learn from that, our viewers and listeners, where you just don't always knock on these doors of opportunities. You're knocking them, and you're knocking on them hard. And you kind of had to overcome that fear. And
yeah.
What's the worst they could say is no, and you move on. But you exactly. Did it. That's great.
Yeah.
Great inspiration. So a 14-year-old sports card mega mogul parlay that passion for sports, entertainment, autograph signing. And that's kind of – was that the vision, how PMG kind of got started, taking your experience with the celebs, the autographs, and then meeting them?
It was super easy because I had the relationships at that
point. That's kind of cool. That
they already knew, like, hey – hit these appearances and autograph signings have gone so well. Yeah, you know, let's give Darren a shot. He's always, you know, a good guy to work with. We were happy with him. It's super organized. And, you know, it was trial and error, and I just started learning. And, you know, like I said, before I knew it, the agency just took off.
That is awesome. Tell me about – I really want to know about this because there's something that you did that no one other person has done. Iconic move, Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. Tell me the – connection that you brought back to them. I need to hear this story.
So you'll read the intro to this book, and the intro is all about the Ali Frazier experience, the greatest accomplishment of my professional career. So I started working with Ali in 94, Joe in 95, and I didn't realize how bad the animosity was. And for years, me and Harlan Werner, Muhammad's agent, would try to get them both behind the scenes. And there was some very close calls. The Ali's wanted to fly us to the movie premiere with Will Smith in L.A. And Joe didn't want to leave. Joe kept saying, you know, "You tell that son of a bitch, if he wants to see me, it's got to be on my turf." And, you know, Muhammad would come back to me the next time. I told him what Joe said. "Well, you tell Joe he's still a goddamn gorilla." And I'm like, this is crazy.
This is not wrestling. This is not fake and rivalry. This know, is like real
really
bad blood.
They despised each other. And then finally, it was All-Star Weekend in Philadelphia, 2002. And I got a call from Lonnie and Muhammad's wife, Lonnie, and Damon Bingham, who's since passed. Howard Bingham's son, the famed photographer, was Muhammad's best friend. He passed. And they said, like, "We'd like to invite you and Marvis to our suite tonight to have dinner with us and Muhammad." And I'm out of my mind. I was like, holy crap, it's going to go down, because it was in Philly. So I see Joe an hour later without hesitation. He goes, "Okay, man, let's go see the damn butterfly," because that's what he called him, the butterfly. So in the book, the reason why I thought it was a great intro is I was living imposter syndrome at that time. Nobody had any idea. You thought from the outside I had everything going on. You know, the life, you know, the woman, the money, the, you know, the success, the biggest stars in the world. But I couldn't ever be me. I developed a hardcore opiate addiction at 14, and it didn't stop. The party didn't stop until I was 38 and suicidal. And about an hour before the meeting, I am in my hotel room snorting Oxycontins and Vicodins because I was like, how the hell did this nerdy, shy, broken Jewish kid from suburban New Jersey have this opportunity with two kings of all kings that I'm going to be there at the dinner table where any megastar president or world leader wanted to be? And nobody knew.
Wow. You would think that you would never have to deal with any of those demons. You're on top of the world, like you said.
I never loved myself. You know, I played the big shot for so many years. I wanted everybody to think I arrived, but because, you know, I didn't speak up, I didn't have the courage to address the verbal teasing and the, you know, not feeling comfortable in my own skin and, you know, never feeling a part of, which is why when I speak now, my favorite groups are to the teens because I don't want them to become the next Aaron Prince.
Thank God you're alive and able to talk about the story, man, because you did some damage to your body for a lot of years. Yep. So now you took your story and you didn't hide it. You didn't just, you know, put it away in your baggage. You're sharing your struggle and your story with everyone, obviously with this book now, Aiming High. What was the purpose of writing that? Do you have a mission now to give back and save, like you're saying?
Hitting yeah, it was twofold. Anna David, my publisher, I love dearly. She always tells me her company got launched because of this book, because of the success. But, you know, look, that's what it's about. I always tell her, I don't need to hear that. You also put me center stage as a global recovery advocate. And Krista McGinnis, who I love to death, I can cry talking about her because she co-wrote a masterpiece. And all I did was talk into a tape recorder, meet her a lot. So when people read this book, just know I had nothing to do with it. You know, it was more from a place of healing. My father passed away about a year earlier. He always wanted me to write a book, but Anna found that sweet spot and said, you're going to write about the hell of your 24-year drug addiction to the beauty of spiritual recovery by taking people along the ride of the super agent life and stories that happen. And first person I had to speak to was Magic to make sure he was cool with it. And if you look at the bottom left-hand corner, you'll see he wrote the foreword of the book.
Forwarded by Irving Magic Johnson. Wow.
Yep. And that's when I knew, I go, this is my calling. It was never about Darren Prince, the agent. My ego wanted me to think that. But, you know, I know when that day, July 2nd, 2008 came, and I called out to God with every fiber in my soul to you know, take the chains off of me. And he heard me, and I, you know, rose up as I heard, I've got you and you're ready. You know, I knew what my calling was. I had a white light moment. And what I thought was then truly was the beginning. I found my soul and my purpose in life through recovery.
That's great. I mean, you have a mission now to help others, you know, and help them break free from addiction, which you're doing. And I mean, what's the temptation? Is it still a constant battle? I mean, you're still going to these lavish events, you know, there's booze, there's alcohol, there's drugs everywhere. Yeah. Still a constant battle and struggle for you?
No, I mean, you know, I'm so good with it. Even I'm with my friend here in the club. We were talking last night at dinner, and even Holly Saunders a couple of weeks ago when we were in town for business meeting, she was like, I don't, babe, I don't want to, you know, drink and fry. I was like, I don't care. I was like, you got to understand when you have that strong spiritual foundation, I actually like it. Like, I don't mind watching people because it's a fresh reminder that I've given up the right to all chemical relief. And I need to be able to see people responsibly have one or two and understand that that's never going to be Darren Prince. You know, for me, it's like I would be off to the races, and I'm so in tune to the world of recovery with my Zoom meetings and speaking engagements. I literally just came from Banyan and Stewart. She was with me. It was an incredible event with, you know, 50, 60 people in recovery. We did a book signing, and what that does for me, you know, that gives me that foundation. That gives me that protection to just know I'm giving this gift away so I can keep it for myself.
I mean, I'm thinking, what is that high like now? Sharing that mission and saving lives.
I still get choked up talking. I mean, there's an experience every friggin' single time, man, that, you know, to see the lights come on in somebody's eyes and, you know, just know that for whatever reason, God touched Darren Prince and I made a deal with him. If you save me, I will save others. You know, look what Hulk Hogan wrote on the back of the book, the top quote, you know, and he see me at my worst.
This is a quote by Hulk Hogan, who's a longtime client of Darren
and
Prince.
Dear friend.
dear friend, for 17 years, Darren has worked 24/7 as my sports agent. I've seen him at his worst and now at his best. Aiming High is all about the journey he took to get there and how today he's living a spiritual life one day at a time. 10 years ago, he asked for the blessing, and now he's become one. That's amazing that, you know, he sees that you're a blessing. I mean, I hate to say it, but I'm a big proponent of a lot of good sometimes comes from tragedy. A lot of good 100%. Sometimes comes from negative, right?
Yep. And in today's world, that's why I was more excited to come on. I mean, we can talk about the agent stuff and the sports and celebrity stories all day long, but there's so many struggling out there right now with this pandemic. And you have to understand, like, it's the adverse times that we find our true selves. That's when you dig down deep and you take those losses, because the losses are what leads you to those W's. And you have to learn to embrace them. I mean, some of the best losses I've had in my life is what made me who I am today.
Let me ask you this, because I read a statistic that was actually, it broke my heart. It said that people that go to recovery, that only 5%?
5% make it.
I don't understand. Why is that number so low?
That's how difficult it is. People leave a treatment center. They think they got it. They have no foundation. They have no spirituality. People, places, and things, they don't change their life. They go right back into that same situation.
How can we get that number up?
We call it that's why I do what I do. I mean, and I've got so many of the biggest recovery advocates around the world. We do the same thing. Chris Herron, Ryan Hampton, Brendan Novak, Tim Ryan, Anna David. I mean, we are just obsessed. We all know that we've been touched. And, you know, when I go to a speech, bro, I've spoken to 5,000 people. And for me, it's the same mindset. If I can get to one every time, because it directly impacts family members, loved ones, friends, work colleagues, sisters, brothers, husbands, wives. And that one, if they get that gift, they'll understand I pulled you out of hell just like somebody did to me. And now it's your job to go back into hell and pull somebody else out.
I didn't think of that, of you're not just saving that one person's life, but everyone that they're related to, because you know how that affects significant others and colleagues and coworkers. I didn't think of the trickle effect of you save one, you're really affecting 20, 30 lives, maybe more.
Yep. I mean, you know, this morning, yesterday, the Instagram messages, Facebook. I mean, I've so many randoms around the world that just reach out. I have my own foundation that I started through this beautiful journey, the Aiming High Foundation. And in the past 2 days, we just committed another $20,000 to different treatment centers. And one of them has me going to speak, Oaks Recovery in South Carolina, in a couple of weeks. And they're actually going to have the people I'm scholarshipping there that night when I speak. I mean, wow. There's no drug in the world that could ever replace that feeling. I have found self-esteem for the first time in my life, bro, not from Magic or Ali or Hulk or Ric Flair or Charlie Sheen. I found self-esteem from doing esteemable acts. And people need to understand that's how you win. That's what life's about. You do that, the blessings will come.
Well, I applaud you. Let me ask you this. I don't think you have to be a recovering addict. I don't think you have to be a current addict to read this book and get something from it. Is that an accurate comment?
100% not. You know, there's obviously a lot about recovery, but there's the adversity. There's the spiritual mindset. There's ways to just improve your thought process. And as I said earlier when I spoke, you know, none of us are responsible for our thoughts, but we are responsible for how long we want to think those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And we should have enough tools to get out of our own head. And if you don't, the quickest thing to do, be of service to other people that you know that are struggling in life, whether it's health-wise, financially, whatever it might be. Because I don't know about you.
And there's plenty of people struggling.
That immediately takes me right out of Darren's head and makes things green again and make me realize we really have luxury problems in life. That's what they are. They're luxury problems.
Well, that's good to know. And I thought that. So viewers, listeners, purchase Aiming High, How a Prominent Sports and Celebrity Agent Hit Bottom at the Top. I can't wait to read this book. So I'll be reading it this whole entire weekend. And like I said, I think we've all had adversity. We've all had negative issues in life. And it's how you bounce back and what you do with that. So amazing story. And it's kind of, you know, people are like, man, this guy had the best. I mean, think about how many men wish they had your job. And they're like, man, this guy is struggling and killing himself. But it could happen to anybody.
I was on the phone about a week and a half ago with Jay Shetty. He's a good friend. And even he was just blown away by when I say this. I did Omar the Rockstar's podcast. Same thing. Like, I truly mean it, bro. I could lose everything tomorrow. The money, the notoriety, it wouldn't change Darren Prince one bit, because on this spiritual journey, I found me. I found the real Darren Prince on the inside. And to know that, you know, life will be okay. I'll figure it out. It would break my heart that I can't take care of everybody that works with me and my family and friends. And but I know it'd be good. And I would look back and say, man, thank you, God, for what a run we had. What's next? You know?
You certainly are in the right mind state. You're very spiritual. And I think that the way you open up and share your story, and I think that's why you've been so successful and for so long in the industry, is that most people don't share with their clients who they really are as a person. They kind of only talk numbers and booking and next gigs, but you seem to build real lifelong friendships, and like it's almost like you're family with your clients.
They're all family. I mean, Carmen Electra and I spoke for an hour and a half a few days ago. She was hysterical, and just it's my mindset in talking to her about certain things she should be doing. I mean, I've got that with every one of them. Every one of them. It's there's not a holiday that goes by, whether it's Thanksgiving or Christmas. And Magic called me from East Lansing, literally Thanksgiving morning. 45 minutes talking about how proud he is of my journey. And, you know, it's my dad's looking down, going over some business stuff. But they are. I mean, they know I am their bulletproof vest. I will kill for every single one of them. And Holly's been with me for, you know, 2.5 months. And you heard what she said. She's like, I get it now. I mean, because it's not about the money. It really isn't. That's easy. I want to get, you know, I want them to feel safe and protected and, you know, be able to open up. And the money is easy when you've gotten to status of, you know, what some of these elite icons, have accomplished. And even as an agent, I don't even find it that difficult. I was telling her on the way over here, I wrote in the book and a couple agents got pissed off. Agents need to realize that managers, the clients make us, we don't make them, you know, and that comes from a place of humility and being real. You know, people could say, "Long super agent, this, whatever." You need the super clients to become a super agent.
Certainly. This is kind of like almost any business, right? You're only good as quality, you know, as your staff.
That's it, you know.
Makes a lot of sense. Speaking of clients, was there ever like a client that you had to fire? You like couldn't take her anymore. You couldn't work with her. You're like, you were just not part of the PMG lifestyle. You're not PMG material. Who is someone you're like, we can't work together, impossible to work with?
No, I mean, there was issues with, you know, several over the years, but I don't think I ever got to the point where I had to like jump out. I mean, Pam Anderson, when she started getting back into acting, like 99, we worked together for about 5 years, and we've seen each other a few times over the years and everything's cool, so that kind of just ran its course. And Evel Knievel at times was difficult going off on me because he had a morphine pump in his back the last few years of his life. But I'll tell you, I think I wrote about that in the book too. He called me up a week before he passed. I got an eBay commercial for his lunchbox bouncing across the screen, and he called me up. And I was always about him passing because he was always in such bad shape, and said, "Darren, I just wanted to thank you for working so hard for me that I think the world of you." And that meant so much because he was the guy that told me, "Let me tell you about life. I failed way more times than I ever succeeded. My most successful jumps are the ones I crashed. But this son of a bitch, Darren, he got up every goddamn time, and that's how winning is done." And I just loved him. I mean, he had such an amazing outlook on life and didn't care what people thought. He was the real-life Superman when you and I were growing up, you know?
Now, looking at your clientele roster, and we talked a little bit about what you did in the boxing world with obviously having Frazier and Ali. You also did something down here, and I think they kind of have a rivalry too. You brought Larry Bird and Magic Johnson together. Those two you don't really see doing too many events together as well.
That was incredible. We did at the Hard Rock in July of 2019, and we were supposed to do a few more, and then the pandemic happened. But no, I have a much, much closer relationship with than Larry, but Larry's been about 24 years too. And Jillian, you know, the one that manages everything, she's a sweetheart. She's incredible. But I worked, I can't even tell you, 15 years I had different events fall apart because Larry just didn't want to do it. But this was like the right night, the right time. We reached out a month and a half earlier, and it was super easy. He wanted it real private, and that was the most epic corporate we'll probably ever pull off. And I remember in the elevator with the two of them, and there was security in front of us, and I was going to text the GM that we were coming down, and I saw the reflection behind me. This is one of the few surreal moments that I've had, especially in recovery when it came to my work. And, bro, I've got Larry and Magic standing behind me in the elevator, and the only thing I could think of was my dad. I was like, man, he's got to be looking down right now. Be like, my boy pulled it off. Yep.
I love the relationship you had with your father and you know, how proud you are of him and how proud he is of you. I love the love. Mm. I love the love. It's beautiful. Tell me about, I wanted to know, talking about another man, because I never heard of this man, but I think he played an important role in your life. Who was Alan Mr. Mint Rosen?
Alan Mr. Mint Rosen.
I never heard of that name.
His name came up 2 days ago with Vervel on Clubhouse, because the younger generation doesn't know us. He was the king of all kings in the card industry. So for anybody listening right now, you guys all have an industry because of Alan Mr. Mint Rosen. He was brash. He had the glasses, the diamond Rolexes, would lay out hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash in his briefcase. He was the mouthpiece in the mid-1980s that brought attention to the baseball card business. And he was known as the million-dollar dealer. The $5.4 million mantle card that just sold was part of his find in Seattle, Washington in 1988. Sports Illustrated did a four-page spread on him in the issue that Mike Tyson knocked out Michael Spinks. And if you open it up, it said, Alan Mr. Mint Rosen is the Duke of Dough in the high-stake card business. And he took a liking to him. He was in Montville, New Jersey. And you know, we all worshipped him. As big as I got, he was the biggest mouthpiece. Reggie Jackson, a lot of the anchors from ESPN, we used to buy from him. And he created an industry. I mean, he was the guy that wound up bringing Wall Street on, and corporate executives, and people should look him up online, because I even spoke to some of my guys at ESPN that did Robin's 30 for 30. I'm like, it's time to do a 30 for 30 on Mr. Mint.
That would be really cool. I've never heard of him. I just saw that
story that, and oddly enough, he passed away a month before my dad did. And my dad was already in the hospital, and you know, to know about it. But what was beautiful with him was he never called me Darren Prince. He loved calling me the Prince of Cards, because that was my name, and everybody knows that was an OG name in the business. And he came to my Prince Marketing Group launch party in 1998 in Atlanta, and I had Pam there, Magic, Joe Montana, Joe Frazier, Michael Buffer, a lot of people, and he brought his kid and his wife, and he came over to me and my dad, and this meant so much. He goes, you might have Prince Marketing Group now, but you're always going to be Prince of Cards to me. He's like, I'm proud of you, Prince. And that meant the world.
That's really great. Did. That's a good story. I never heard of that name. I just, doing my research on you, that name came across, and I said, I got to find out who Mr. Mint is. So I'd like to see that 30 for 30. Maybe we could produce that together, because yes. I love sports cards. I still get the thrill of opening a pack. It's unfortunate that I can't get my kids really involved in the industry now, because it's expensive.
So expensive.
You can't just go buy a pack anymore. And for some reason, I used to just go to like Target and Walmart and check it out and buy a pack. You can't find them anymore. I don't know why. Do you know why?
What's going on? I think either distribution's getting cut off, or I think these stores are realizing there's much more value secondhand, and they're probably getting the stuff in inventory, and they're, who knows how they're reselling them. But, you know, if they're lucky or fortunate enough to get a box of Panini or Topps and it's got some rare $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 insert card, what Target's going to want to put that out for $2 a pack? You know,
you can't get them anymore. It's wild. Is there a card that you still want? You're like, I have a goal to get this card part of my investment collection.
I think I got it all, man. The Bird Magic Dr. J rookie from 1980.
That's the tri card. I've seen that card. That's a beauty.
And I bought two Mint Nines.
Is that the official Bird rookie? That one.
Here's the thing. It's Bird and Magic's rookie, but a lot of people are used to seeing rookies by themselves. So the one that's really undervalued is the next year, 81-82 Tops, because that's the first year Bird and Magic are on their cards.
There's no Larry Bird rookie single card?
No. So a lot of people do look at that second year where Larry's in a green warm-up, which you would remember if you saw the card, certainly. I'm sure. And Magic's going up for the layup. And those are their first two single cards or second year, so I went very heavy into buying a lot of Mint Nines on those.
I saw you even bought some wrestling cards. Yeah, I didn't even know Hulk had them. I know Hulk. But
Hulk and Rick are my guys, so I bought the 1982 All-Stars, which are super rare. I probably have four Hulks, two Ricks, and then I bought a bunch. This is hilarious because I remember buying them in 1985 for $10. I think I bought four unopened boxes of 85 Tops Wrestling that I probably spent $2,000 a piece on. Because just to have them now, because I was like, even wrestling's undervalued.
I mean, you talk about that Mickey Mantle I got sold for what? You said 5.4?
5.4, yeah.
Do you know how many baby boomers I've spoken through the years that have had that card just in their spokes of their bicycles just completely getting shredded? It's just mind-boggling to me.
Yep, I know. But look, a lot of the moms that throw out their kids' cards from my father and my uncles and grandfather's generation, we used to thank the moms. Thank you. Because the supply's not there anymore and the demand is. You either throw them out or you put them in your bicycle spokes.
See, a lot of my friends, and I'm an 80s baby, I feel like all those 80s baseball cards were so mass-produced. We all have the same Ken Griffey. We all have the same – you know, we all have those – Bonds, McGuire, I feel like they're just so...
Anything after 85, man. I mean, Griffey Jr. is still undervalued. Barry Sanders, you know, some of those cards I think have room to go. The Emmitt Smiths, the Troy Aikmans. But I really stuck with, like I said, 1981 and prior because they did, the companies got so, so greedy. And I think a lot of fathers said, oh, you know what? I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm going to spend thousands of dollars on 86 and 87 Topps boxes and stick them away. And in 25 years, we're going to pull them out and they're not even worth what they paid.
That's the crazy part. They saved them. I think everybody has those boxes because they didn't make – I'm not going to throw out the Mickey Mantles like my dad did. And unfortunately, they missed that boat on there. I'm sure there's a couple hidden gems
There's some. I mean, certain series or years, there's some. But I think the majority of it's garbage.
We are speaking with Darren Prince. He is the author and the memoir right here, Aiming High, How a Prominent Sports and Celebrity Agent Hit Bottom at the Top. Make sure you get this book. It's on Amazon and anywhere else you might be finding books. He's also the CEO of Prince Marketing Group, which is the biggest sports entertainment booking agency in the world, in my opinion. Maybe there's bigger ones, but no one does it better and right than you. So we'll just take that title and give it to you. I'd like to play a little game with you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We like to play it with a lot of our guests. It's called Word for Word. I'm going to say a word, and you have to say the first word that comes to your mind. Instead of saying a word, I'm just going to say your client's names. Hopefully none of them fire for him for this, but I'm going to say a client's name. You say the first word that comes to your mind. You understand the rules?
Yes.
All right, producer, give me that game show music I like in the background for this. I hear it. All right, here we go. Word for word with Darren Prince. Here we go. Hulk Hogan.
A gem.
Larry Bird.
Larry Legend.
Carmen Electra.
Beauty inside and out.
Chevy Chase.
Absolutely hilarious.
Vince Neil.
Rock God.
Jenny McCarthy.
Sweetheart.
Joe Gorga, my buddy.
Love Joe Gorga.
He's going to be watching this.
Yeah, he's my bro. My bro.
Holly Saunders.
Another one. Inner beauty.
That is word for word with Darren Prince from Prince Marketing Group. You got an A. You got a pass. 100% on that. We appreciate that. You were kind. I don't know if you were saying everything you were thinking, but we'll take it. We'll take it. Teasing you. Of course you did. So we are speaking with Darren Prince. What outside of your book and helping people, where else are you finding areas of inspiration?
I think it's just taking care of me. Like, I think during this pandemic, I've absolutely created the best version of myself in my life. It was the best business year, best personal year. You know, I'm talking to people all the time about, you know, just move away from the negative people. I think it's really an opportunity to get into other people's soul and their quirks, and not even recovery related. Like, I love speaking to people like you and just in general. And like I said, my talk with Jay Shetty a few weeks ago, it's just so nice to have, you know, other people of influence that sometimes, you know, you get caught up in your own routine and don't realize that there's different ways to live life than the way that we've been living. Scooter Braun and I spoke maybe 3-4 months ago, and I remember him telling me, he goes, Darren, he goes, you know what I'm loving about this? I'm learning to just be still in the moment and in the now. And that's coming from, you know, the king right now, you know, but I've always lived that way since I got sober. Life always has to be about the now and the present, because if you want to stress about 100 things that may or may not happen 2-3 months from now, 99 of them are never even going to happen that way anyway. It's wasted headspace, and the one that might go wrong could be the biggest blessing.
I love these golden nuggets that you're sharing. Mm-hmm. You're living life right, Darren. You're living life. Like I said right in the beginning, you're an inspiration. You're a role model. Absolutely.
Thank you.
How hard has it been, though, for you? I mean, the red carpet events with the pandemic have been kind of eliminated, the meet and greets. Are you finding that you have to reinvent ways to book your clients? We did.
It's been incredible. We started Prince Digital Group, and we're specializing in social media campaigns. We're doing digital commercial, digital ads. Zoom events have been absolutely incredible. We've booked even clients we never worked with before. Keith Urban did a Zoom concert for a corporation out of his hotel suite in Sydney, and Sebastian Maniscalco did a couple stand-ups from his office in his house. You know, it's like I said, it's just about reinventing and educating the brands on what they should be doing to keep their executives motivated and inspired. I mean, the amount of, you know, Q&A talks and keynotes that Magic's given, every one of them. I mean, they're all as busy as they've ever been. Chevy Chase, we have this deal with Mills Entertainment for Christmas Vacation that he sold at every city last November and December, 3,000 people. They couldn't do it this year. So we moved it to Zoom. And him and Beverly D'Angelo did a few of them. It's just great.
So the opportunity, if businesses want to collaborate and have one of your celebrities endorse their product, still the opportunity exists. They could do it through their social media platforms.
100%. Carmen's promoting her Go-Go skin cream line right now. She has a male enhancement product that's coming out in a month. And they literally sent one camera person to her house because of social distancing and created great content.
It's like an oxymoron, though, having that problem with Carmen Electra, right?
Right. Yeah.
Your women have to really trust you. I mean, you got Carmen Electra on one arm. You got Pamela Anderson, Holly Sand. Like, what's the jealousy like in your love life when you're hanging out with, like, some of the most beautiful women in the world?
You know, I think I've been fortunate the last probably 5 or 6 years, but it was definitely a problem, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. It wasn't easy. And these were beautiful when I was with, but, you know, some of them would even tell me, do you have any idea how insecure you can make a woman knowing that you're leaving me or just coming back from seeing this one or that? I'm like, but I'm not that guy that wanted to make them feel that way, but they would see how over the top I was with making sure they were okay. But it came out of a place of love and friendship and looking out for them and protecting them more than anything. So, you know, I think for the most part, I've been pretty fortunate though recently.
You've lived an awesome life. I love the story. Everyone loves kind of that comeback story and kind of going from you hit bottom when you were at top, like your book says. And now you're back on top, and I think you're going to be staying there and continually rising. And it's awesome what you're doing, helping so many people, especially, I mean, here in Florida. Keep coming down here because we got a big problem down here. I don't know what it is in Florida, but I'd like to talk to you about that because you probably know a lot more than me. I mean, there's big money in these pharmacies. They're just pumping these pills. I mean, how can we stop this? I mean,
well, Florida started because of the pain management clinics. Mm-hmm. That's why it became the worst state in America. And, you know, people driving in from all over to buy Oxys and Percocets and Vicodins by the thousands and cash pay. And, you know, it just took too long to crack down on it. And, you know, before you know it, you have millions and millions of addicts that, you know, they're in this dark hole and they have no idea how to get out of it, you know. But there is hope. There is recovery. I'm living proof. I've seen some of the worst cases in the world, and people have these incredible, beautiful, spiritual, sober lives. And that's why, like I said, for me, the agent stuff, it's great. I know people are intrigued by that, and they love hearing the stories, but the only thing that matters to me is pushing this gift out there for people. I know I've been anointed. I know I've, you know, been touched. And, I mean, look, when Joel Osteen and Victoria become dear friends of mine, and they're mesmerized by my bottom to beginning journey, I know that, you know, if this is something greater than myself, Darren Prince ain't that special. Somebody said, I'm keeping you around, boy. You got some work to do for me because I'm going to give this to you.
That's great. Countless lives have saved, and I'm sure that's going to continue to rise from the book, from your speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. What's your feelings on medical marijuana? Is that something you endorse?
I'm down with it 100%. I actually went back to my own high school in Livingston and spoke, and it started a little bit of craziness when a mother asked me about it. I said, look, I said, honestly, I'm down with it. I was like, because to me, it's better than benzos. It's better than, you know, the Xanax, the Valium, the Oxys, the Vicodins, the Percocets. And, you know, she had some of her kids there with her, and she thought it was a reckless answer. I said, it's not a reckless answer. You're asking me for my opinion. It's the lesser of two evils. And the bottom line is I've never heard of anybody getting arrested for driving high on weed.
Or overdosing and dying.
You know, or overdosing on weed. So that's my opinion. I think if you're going to decide.
I'm glad you said that because I think from a pain relief standpoint, I wish they would start pushing and prescribing more medical marijuana. But I just know the lobbyists and the money just. Yep. These pill mills down here, it's heartbreaking, and so many families have been.
And you know people, everybody does. Everybody in your office right now, Berman and Berman, everybody and somebody, you know, suffering from the opiate epidemic. You know, I was privileged to go to the White House when the former President Trump was there twice and be a part of that opiate epidemic movement and go to schools and businesses and talk to people because nobody's off limits. Nobody.
Well, Darren Prince, you are a true inspiration. We really appreciate you coming in, sharing a little about your story. I can't wait to get into this book this weekend and just kind of absorb everything. And it's kind of amazing kind of hearing a little bit of the story behind it and your mission and your philosophy now. I think it's going to even be more touching. So I'm excited to read that. Viewers and listeners, make sure you get the book Aiming High, Darren Prince, an amazing story, how a prominent sports and celebrity agent hit bottom at the top. And on the back from Hulk Hogan, and we didn't even talk about Dennis Rodman. I don't even know how you could hang out with that guy, because how do you even keep him in line?
He's on his own journey. You know, he's my boy. We'll always be there for each other, but he's got good weeks, good months, bad years, good years.
Listen, I'll tell you what. I've had a chance to – he's down in Florida. I think he lives down here. I bump into him a lot.
He's back in Cali now.
He's very intelligent. I don't think people realize, like, that guy –
they don't
that
give
guy,
him enough credit.
He speaks, like, so elegantly and great, you know, huge word, but he's very intelligent, surprisingly.
Yeah.
You just don't think, you know, you see the hair and the earrings and the antics on the court, but that guy knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. We are speaking with Darren Prince, man. We really, again, appreciate your time. This is not the last time that you and I will speak. I think you probably have another book coming in your future, part two.
Yeah.
We'll give a little sneak peek of that coming soon. But viewers and listeners, thank you for joining us. Please subscribe to this podcast. Helps us bring on amazing guests like Darren Prince, the Prince of Cards, the mega sports celebrity booking agent. Prince Marketing Group is the number one agency. If you're looking for celebrity endorsement, the guy has an endless book of his roster is just, it's just killer. We don't need to name drop. Go to Prince Marketing Group online and check it out. Follow him on all social media. But viewers and listeners, thank you again for joining us. Talk Golden to Me video podcast, your host, Golden TV here at TBD Studios in Boca Raton, signing off for another episode. Thank you. Darren, say goodbye to them. We're off.
Thank you.